From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
Well, you know, we talk about empathy all the time in our organizations, and we hope that we are born with empathy because a very minute percentage are born without empathy or without the capacity for empathy. Did you know that, Pete?
I did not. That's news to me.
Yeah. They're called sociopaths.
Oh.
Psychopaths.
All right.
No, psychopaths. And we try to teach it to our kids, and we're learning actually that empathy can be taught. And it turns out that empathy is good for business. It's good for organizations of all types. Joining us today is branding expert Maria Ross, and she joins us to discuss her new book called The Empathy Edge, Harnessing the Value of Compassion as an Engine for Success. It's a playbook for brands, for leaders, and teams. Maria shares the habits and traits of leaders who, through employing empathy and compassion, foster more productivity and loyalty. Maria Ross, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, it's really nice to have you. And Pete and I were talking before we came on air about empathy and how we're hearing more and more about it and how it's still, I think that still people think, well, yeah, you know, there's empathy, but then there's also the bottom line and, you know, never the two shall meet. And you're arguing the exact opposite in your new book, The Empathy Edge.
Yes, I am. I like to say that cash flow, creativity, and compassion are not mutually exclusive. And I specifically wrote the book to make the case to the skeptics out there that actually, no, there's a lot of companies, big and small, finding great success precisely because they are employing empathy. And, you know, we need to start looking in that direction, that companies can be successful, organizations can be successful, brands can create more loyal customers, all that good bottom line stuff. And that's what the data and the research show. And so what I've put together in the book is sort of my case in front of the court of why this is so important and how your organization can benefit. But it's also my sneaky attempt to try to make the world a better place in general.
Yeah, I like that. Well, you know, one of the first things we know in business is to know your customer. And literally, to know your customer takes empathy. And the more empathetic you are, the better you'll be at knowing your customer.
Yeah, and it's funny that, you know, so many people say that, and then their actions on a day-to-day basis within their organization or with their marketing efforts don't reflect that at all. And we can see that in, you know, many of us have experience with brands who advertise that they know their customer and they're empathetic and customer service is their number one priority. And then we see that the actions that they take are in direct conflict to that. And that's because they haven't done what I call operationalizing empathy. So it's all well and good to just say, well, you as a person, just be empathetic, right? But as an organization, you have to create policies and practices, habits, traits. You have to lock it into the DNA of the company so that your policies reflect empathy. You know, what are your customer service policies? What are your employee practices? What are you doing to create a welcoming, diverse environment? And that sometimes has to start with something very programmatic and something very policy-driven to create that behavior.
In programmatic, what might you be insinuating on that capacity?
So exactly what I just said. I mean, you can't just say everybody be nice to each other and we're going to put empathy as a value on a pretty poster on our wall and we're going to put it on our website. But things like, how are you hiring employees? Are you screening for empathy? How are you rewarding employees? How are promotions determined? Is that part of their performance evaluation? For example, lots of companies, such as Airbnb, build empathy and compassion and service into their employee evaluations. So that is how you are rewarded. That's how you're promoted. And that can often force the behavior of getting people to think with more of an empathetic lens.
Can companies who are valuing bottom line higher than empathy, can those two things coexist?
Yes, I think that they can. I think that, you know, we need to stop. We have a very, very rich talent market out there, and we need to stop just hiring bodies to fill roles, especially if they're customer-facing roles. But my book makes the case that everyone in the organization should be able to flex their empathy muscle. As you stated at the beginning, empathy is an innate human trait. So when people say, well, I'm just not naturally empathetic, all that means is just like you haven't gone to work out in a while. You haven't flexed that muscle. Maybe in the environment that you grew up in, or maybe in the workplace you're currently in, has beat it out of you. But there's ways to go about practicing and building habits to flex that muscle again, so you can start to adopt that mindset and it becomes second nature. The interesting thing was I spoke to a psychologist as part of the research for the book, which took about 3 years. And it was fascinating to talk to her because she works with autistic children. And what they do with very severely autistic children to help them with empathy and social cues is to give them rote lists of things to do. So initially, they're not coming at this saying, I want to be genuinely empathetic or comfortable in social situations. They're just following a list of prescriptive directions. But what happens is it changes something in their prefrontal cortex. And it actually, the feedback they get from the world from acting in this way, the results they get, foster a change in the, you know, and I'm not a doctor, but changing the wiring in their brain or the chemistry in their brain so that this starts to become second nature. And we can all think about, you know, when we develop habits like working out 3 times a week or flossing every night, it has to start as something we're making ourselves do. But eventually it becomes so ingrained that it's something we can do automatically. And that's where we want to get to with empathy. We want to take advantage of this innate human skill. And, you know, it's not necessarily more feminine or more masculine. I want to, you know, be very clear on that. But take advantage of that to say, yeah, you know, if you need to kind of have this checklist of things to do when you go into a meeting or you have a difficult conversation, go ahead and do that, because eventually it's going to become part of your DNA.
You tell a story about Christina Harbridge, who was an 18-year-old college student who needed to work. There was some family illness that she needed to help raise money for as a college student. She went to work for a collection agency. And wow, the story you tell about her is pretty interesting. Can you quickly tell us, because we think that collection agencies wouldn't really employ the practice of empathy.
Yeah,
it's really about getting the money back.
Right, the least empathetic profession ever, right? And, that was the interesting thing about talking with Christina. And by the way, this is funny. Since I've written the book, I found out there's 2 other collection agencies that operate this way and have found huge success. So it's really interesting. But, yeah, Christina was just horrified by the actions, the behaviors she saw of her employees, or not her employees, her coworkers in the collection agency where she worked, about how they were really lovely people. And then they got on the phone and they were just horrible to clients or whoever, you know, the people who were in debt. And it really shook her up. And she decided to try to fast forward, build her own collection agency and say, you know, I'm going to try to get people to pay their bills through empathy and understanding. And the big piece of that starts with how you treat your own employees. And this is why the culture piece in the book is so important, because you can't really have an empathetic brand to your customers if you're treating your own employees horribly. So she was very supportive of her employees. She took a very servant leadership approach. She told them, you know, we are going to build trust, because the first point of the collection call is not to get the money. It's to gain trust and get an honest answer. And you can't do that if you're, you know, putting people on the defensive. So what are these people going through? How can we talk to them? How can we help them through this? And the result was her collection agency had 3 times the industry benchmark in success in their collections. And it was all because of this way of being more human and being more empathetic. And so much so that they would get thank you letters from people in debt who were paying off their bills. They would have people drop off gifts at their office. Like, no one's ever heard of doing that for your collection agency. They even got some wedding invitations, if you can believe that, because they created a human connection. And ultimately, the goal upon which their bottom line was measured was impacted positively simply because they adopted an empathetic mindset, both for the employees and for the people they were trying to collect money from.
That's a really nice story. You start off one of your chapters with a quote from Howard Schultz, the chairman of Starbucks, and he says, authentic brands don't emerge from marketing cubicles or advertising agencies. They emanate from everything the company does. And this brings to me the question of, and I don't know if there's a saying, but you know, there are companies who practice greenwashing, for example, not pretending, but giving off that marketing piece of how sustainable they are, and it's just greenwashing. Is that going on also with this empathy piece? Are companies seeing the need in the marketplace to give off this impression of practicing empathy? And if so, how do we look out for that?
Yeah, they absolutely are. It's what I call in the book the empathy veneer. And this is what's very closely related to my work as a brand strategist with organizations, because you can't just paint this coat of whatever brand attribute you want, whether it's empathy or innovation or, you know, being edgy, whatever it is. It has to be authentic. You have to walk the talk. And that's why in the book I very clearly walk people through, first it has to start at the individual level, then it has to start at the internal culture level, and then it can be believable when you launch it externally to the world, to your customers or your clients. And you know, that is how you avoid it being just something that, you know, oh, it's just something coming from marketing. You know, once a year we're going to do some really big philanthropic event and get a lot of good press for it, and it's going to be great. And so I think, you know, to your question about what do you look for, I think you have to look at your every interaction you have with a company. You know, what's in the press? What is your experience as an actual customer? When you call for help or support or you email, you know, are you met with true empathy? And so this is why this can't be something that is just sort of a checkbox thing. It's got to be something that's lived from the inside out. And the organizations that I profiled in the book, you know, have really shown that this is something that has to emanate from within. And, you know, again, if you have to bring people along with it because they're like, okay, let's be more empathetic because it's going to make us more profitable, I say bring it on, because I always like to joke, it's like being sort of pregnant. You either are pregnant or you're not. So when you're performing an empathetic act or taking an empathetic mindset, for whatever reason got you there, you're doing it. And so, again, like the psychologist, if you start to get different results and different feedback from the world, like, oh, this feels good. Oh, this actually made the customer spend more money with us. Oh, this actually, you know, now we want to do more. We want to do more of this. And so I would just caution against looking at a company that's doing sort of these one-hit wonders of, you know, one time they're doing something at the holidays for the community. And doing good is just one aspect of creating an empathetic brand. Again, it's how you treat your employees, what your customer service policies are. It's not just going out there and presenting a big check once a year to a local charity.
We're discussing The Empathy Edge, a book by Maria Ross, and you have some really great insights. And I'm curious, in the news, there was a recent company that has this branding, marketing perception of being empathetic and being compassionate and caring about their communities, but just revealed that they were cutting benefits of those part-time staff members. Can those two things coexist? Is there a mixed messaging in that environment?
I think there is a mixed messaging, and I don't know all the details. I think I know exactly the company you're talking about, but I don't know all the details behind why that decision had to be made. But I think what's important is that, you know, a lot of people who don't want to embrace this idea of empathy at work or empathy, you know, impacting the bottom line, get confused and say, well, empathy is just doing what, you know, just giving people what they want. And sometimes you can be greatly empathetic as an organization or to your employees, but even if you're delivering a decision that they don't want, you know, so it all depends on how and why this decision came to be. And did they think about how it was going to impact their employees? Did they try to do something else to help their employees in the interim? How did they deliver the news? Did they get input from them? And so, you know, one of the most empathetic managers I ever worked for had to lay off my entire team. And so, you know, that was not a decision that I wanted. But he is one of the most empathetic leaders I've ever worked for. And it was all in about how he came to the decision, how he helped us through it, how he explained it to us, the lens through which he was delivering the information and what he was doing for us in the aftermath. And so I think if a company has to make a hard decision like that because of costs or because of, you know, just not having the money, you have to look underneath the covers and see, you know, how is that being delivered and what are they doing for their employees as an alternative. Now, that said, you know, on the surface, that is very incongruous with them being an empathetic brand, because there are there's a great story from someone I just recently did a panel with where they were going to have to cut one of their most junior consultants because of the budget from the client being reduced. And what happened was everyone else in the organization said, no, this is absolutely not something we're going to let happen. We are each going to take a very small pay cut for the next couple of months so this person can stay on. And that's what I mean by an empathetic culture. You're building a mindset. You're hiring the right people who are able to come to those decisions and make those hard choices when they need to be made.
Yeah, and it seems less prescriptive and more informative through the processes. I work in a current environment where we've had to make some of those tough decisions, mm-hmm. and where the leadership sat down and said, we'll take the pay cuts, we'll take the hit on this and make sure that our staff doesn't. And
right.
sometimes that, do you communicate that? Do you not communicate that? What would you recommend?
I don't think you can have a blanket piece of advice for that. I think it depends on what is going on in the company. And the empathetic answer is not necessarily that everybody takes a pay cut. You know, sometimes one of the most empathetic things that executives and managers can make sometimes is to let someone go if they're not right for the role, if they're not going to be able to find success in the work that they're doing. That can be very empathetic. And what I mean by that is, are you looking at it from their point of view? Are you stepping into their shoes and saying, okay, this person is performing poorly on every performance evaluation, right? Every task we give them, they're performing poorly. What's going on here? What is happening to this person? This can't feel good to this person to be failing every day, right? So either they're not in the right role, or we need to help shore up their skills in certain areas, or in some cases, we may need to let them go. And so, again, I don't want to conflate like doing these magnanimous acts as being the only way you can show empathy. You can show empathy simply by adopting the other person's point of view and then giving them what they need. And in some cases, what they need might be that they have to be in a different role. And those can be the hardest decisions to make. And I think many of us can relate to situations where we've seen a positive example of that, and we've seen a very negative example of that.
Mm. Well, the book is The Empathy Edge, Harnessing the Value of Compassion as an Engine for Success. Our guest is Maria Ross. And Maria, thank you so much for writing this book. And I think this is a really great book for those people in leadership positions who are wondering, am I using the empathy veneer, or am I really emanating, as Howard Schultz says, from the company and everything we do? So thank you for joining
us. Thanks for tuning
in
to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.